Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
This is Patricia Camilleri, welcoming you to University Matters on Campus FM. In this series, together, we shall continue to discover more about the work of the university's academics and about the many activities that will be taking place on campus over the next year. Today's program is one of a mini-series that I am doing based on the work of the Faculty for the Built Environment here at the University of Malta. This faculty was formerly known as the Faculty of Architecture and Civil Engineering. One of the reasons for this interest in the faculty is that this is the 100th anniversary of its existence as a separate faculty and an occasion to showcase how the faculty has evolved over the last couple of decades, perhaps, and perhaps even more. And with me today to talk about their work for University Matters on Campus FM are Perit Kevin Gatt and Mr. Antoine Gatt, and they are going to talk to us about an area which is an example of the approaches to studies in architecture that are part of that evolution that I mentioned before. Just a word about my guests, and I shall rush through their little bios so that we have lots of time to talk about their projects. Perit Kevin Gatt initially trained as an architect and civil engineer here at the university, subsequently specialised in hydrology for environmental management by reading for a Master of Science degree at Imperial College London. He subsequently continued to further his studies by reading for a Master's in Business Administration at the University of Malta. Kevin has over 20 years of experience in the public administration and is a member of the academic staff at the Faculty for the Built Environment, where he lectures both undergraduate and postgraduate levels, and is responsible for the areas of water resources, waste management, sustainable development, and climate change, all subjects about which we shall be talking later on. During this time, he has also worked on various initiatives related to those areas within public administration perspective. He acted as local counterpart to the Danish firm COWI in the development of a master plan for upgrading the wastewater network in Malta, and was also involved in its implementation of parts of it. He has also held the position of chairperson of Malta's Strategic Environmental Assessment Focal Point, and he's also held the position of trustee on the Board of Trustees of the Chartered Institute for Water and Environmental Management, UK, for 4 years. Mr. Antoine Gatt is a professional landscape architect with experience in both the Maltese Islands and abroad. He has worked on various EU-funded projects related to the environment. Currently, he is managing the LifeMed Green Roof Project at the University of Malta, about which we shall be speaking, researching the potential of green roofs locally and encouraging the dissemination of the technology. He also lectures at Faculty of the Built Environment on landscape-related issues. Antoine advocates the importance of green infrastructure, especially in urban environments, so as to improve the quality of urban life and increase urban biodiversity. I think perhaps we should start off with a bit of a question about, perhaps, Perit Gatt, you can answer this general question about this buzzword, green building, its place at the moment in the area of architecture and its importance for the general public in the commercial area and the personal building area and other areas. What is this green building all about?
Well, the urban environment has been characterized principally by the allocation of land for building purposes on which buildings for various uses were developed. The focus on buildings was primarily related to space requirements, to aesthetics and structural stability. However, we have realized that over the course of these years, the neglect of the environmental dimension has led to urban spaces becoming less comfortable than they were originally designed to be. Moreover, the challenge of sustainability, sustainable development, and the challenge of climate change has brought us to realize that buildings have an important role to play in ensuring that they are resource efficient, that they treat resources with respect, and that they combine together to provide an environment in which everyone would like to live in, and promoting thereby a good quality of life. Climate change challenges have shown us clearly that buildings consume a lot of energy, a lot of resources, and therefore the focus has now turned to make these buildings, or to make new buildings, as green as possible. And by green we mean that they are respectful in the use of their energy, they conserve water, and they have an orientation which respects passive design, so that they rely for their comfort on design elements rather than mechanical elements, all of which bring together the three pillars of sustainable development, which are the economic and financial feasibility of urban areas, because buildings command the price on the market, the social aspect, that means the comfort, the quality of life, the health, and finally the environmental dimension, where buildings are not seen as a threat to the environment, but they provide biodiversity corridors, they provide the opportunity to enhance without overstepping on the natural environment, which we cherish and which is becoming even more distant from the children that today form part of urban areas.
Your particular area, as we've said in your little bio, is waste management. So where does water conservation really fit in buildings?
There are two facets which we have to consider. We have to consider buildings as users of water, but we have to recollect that from the time of the Knights, we had an obligation to have a cistern which would collect an annual year's rainfall for its subsequent use in the building. Today we have developed, technology has developed, and rather than using a bucket and a rope to draw up our water, we use a pump, and we have effective plumbing systems that can channel various forms of water throughout the building. Therefore, we are now advocating, or we should now be advocating, smaller cisterns, but cisterns which are connected to those non-potable uses of water, such as toilet flushing, for example, which constitutes a horrendously high amount of the total water we consume. It consumes around about one third. But even though we have a relatively low per capita water consumption of 80 liters per person per day, there are still savings which we can make. It is interesting to know that the fact that we depend for 57% of our water supply on reverse osmosis technology clearly puts a point that we are not self-sufficient in terms of water resources. If we look at the quality problems and the quantity problems in terms of groundwater, the message that is loud and clear is that we have to do something. And therefore we have to look forward at new buildings to ensure that they integrate water conservation and water, I would say, water efficiency practices as part of their design, as part of their finishing. But we also have to look backwards, because most of the building stock is now on the market, and therefore we have to look at trying to retrofit such buildings without causing disruption to people, because people will reject the idea if you, for example, put the case that in order for water conservation to happen in your building, you have to rip up all your bathrooms. I wouldn't do it, let alone...
Not a very popular idea.
Let alone people who have to minimize or want to minimize the disruptions in their life. So we look at non-destructive interventions which can make a little bit of a difference, which can help the situation, taking into account that most of our development today is redevelopment. And therefore we are looking at the redevelopment of existing buildings, and we hope that this two-pronged strategy could lead to, first of all, minimizing the consumption we have in existing buildings. And once they are demolished and redeveloped, then they can be it can be done so in a water-efficient manner.
You were saying before that people don't like the idea of disruption in their houses, etc. At a certain point, though, some sort of legislation, probably persuading people to do something about it, would have to come into being. you start off with trying to persuade people that it's a very good idea and how advantageous this is going to be, but at a certain point you have to sort of push it a bit. Is this being done in Malta?
Well, planning legislation obliges us to have a cistern which has a volume which is calculated as 0.6 times the area of the building. The 0.6 derived from the annual rainfall, and therefore it is the depth of rainfall times the area of the building, which gives you a volume. But we need, as I said, to move away from that concept. We need to move away from the concept of storing water to using water as a substitute for potable water supplies. That means we need to distinguish uses which are non-potable, and we need to distinguish uses which are potable. The joke I often make is that we actually flush our toilets with the same water we brush our teeth. So should we store our toothbrushes in the toilet? Definitely not. And therefore, it is clear that we are talking about two types of waters. And water which is generated as a result of the development and used on site mitigates against the runoff which causes our flooding problems, and therefore serves to attenuate such problems and avoid the necessity to subsequently invest in high infrastructure. Obviously, when we talk about retrofitting, we are trying to minimize the impact and therefore changing the aerator, which is the very, very, very last bit of your tap, from the standard aerator which it comes fitted with to one with a low flow, can reduce your water consumption from taps by 50%. Placing a gel bag or even a more vernacular plastic bottle or brick in your toilet can lower your consumption by 10, 20, 30%, depending on the volume of your toilet. And the act of simply changing your shower head is another way in which we can contribute to more efficient water demand without causing an inconvenience. This is the underlying thematic I would like to emphasize, that in achieving water conservation, we do not want to lower the quality of life of people. This is not saying we will ration water, but we will use water in a more judicious manner. And we've tried it out in a hotel, we've tried it out in 10, 11 schools. We are now trying it in 100 households in order to be able to understand better which of these retrofits are more efficient, in order to understand the attitude of people towards experiencing lower flows, with a view to be able to integrate with the policymakers and disseminate and share our results in order to arrive at a situation where perhaps initially we have a code of practice for buildings which is, or which finds the support of developers, which finds the support of planners, which finds the support of people involved in water policy, and which would have been developed as a result of the various research projects we do here at the faculty, as well as with the interactions we have with our peers in the public administration.
What about the waste management side of your research? In what direction has that been going?
Well, we had the privilege to be asked by the Minister responsible for sustainable development, the environment and climate change to chair a team of specialists in waste management to develop Malta's waste management plan for the period 2014 till 2020. As well as a minimization plan for waste, because these two documents are part of Malta's obligations under the water framework, under the waste framework directive. I say lucky because I firmly believe that we should, as academics, be very much involved with government, with the private sector, in order to feel the famous pulse that exists out there and which is fundamental in shaping our research. And having met, I would say, the stakeholders once and twice and understood what they were facing and what the problems were, we managed to develop Malta's waste management strategy, which was very well received both locally and by the Commission. But interestingly, that experience has led to the development of four research projects, which we will share with government once they are completed, because they are being undertaken by students following our postgraduate courses, which will lead to understanding the composition of organic waste, how waste is generated by the commercial sector and how we can manage that better, looking at incentives to enhance recycling of metal, plastic, paper and glass, as well as to understand better the public's opinion, the public's reaction, were Malta to have a waste to energy thermal treatment facility. And this is how the public administration and university walk hand in hand, because it is to the mutual benefit of everyone. What we produce, we disseminate, but the experience we get from being involved on the area, on the ground, we can then transmit back to our students who then have a real life experience of the problems they will face as part of their life after graduation.
I was listening to the BBC the other day, I always listen to the 6 o'clock news, and they were talking about a story in one of the newspapers whereby from sewage waste they were actually picking up mineral content and also including even gold. How that got into the sewage system, I'm not quite sure, but they were saying that nowadays we have to look into every single moment of our waste management to see what benefits can be brought out.
Absolutely. I think we have arrived at a point in time where waste should be eradicated from the English dictionary and waste should signify a resource. Waste, which has the yuck appeal to most people, is in fact a resource, because whether it is your plastic, which you can reform, whether it is your metal can, which you can recast, whether it is glass, which can have many, many, many uses and can be remolded, whether it is paper, whether it is organic waste from which we can get energy, whether it is sewage with the treated effluent being used as a substitute for groundwater and with sludge being an organic waste yielding energy, clean energy. Same for animal manure waste. All things which prima facie are disgusting at first sight, but which have an embedded resource value which we have to learn to appreciate, maximize, use, and make sure that we discard no embedded energy content within such streams.
Through the U-Green S project that you've been involved in, of course, we're also looking at other countries and seeing what their experience is and joining forces, and I think that's also an important point to make.
Yes, the U-Greens project is a project which is financed under the Lifelong Learning Programme, and it involves a transfer of knowledge which can help us to produce that additional knowledge for our students and for even continuous professional development purposes that will enable them to explore another dimension of green buildings. Here we are looking at the teaching component as opposed to the practical component, which is complementary and which is being handled by my colleague. But we tend to develop modules on green roofs and on living walls, which we have used to train a group of 28 professionals, which we use to pass on to our students for incorporation in their design project. And therefore, the expertise of other Mediterranean countries, such as Greece and Spain, is being transferred to Malta and Cyprus with a view to enhancing the learning experience. And this is the scope of the Lifelong Learning Project. We are grateful for the funding that has come our way, as we are grateful for other funding that has come, for example, through the Malta International Airport to permit us to their Corporate Social Responsibility Fund to make a difference in studying water conservation. All these initiatives, together with the Memorandum of Understanding that we have just signed with the Ministry responsible for water, are all initiatives that sharpen the focus of the faculty and explore another dimension of the building fabric.
As time is rushing on, I think we'd better turn to Antoine Gatt and plunge into this project, the LifeMed Green Roof Project. Perhaps you can fill us in on it.
Yes, the Lifemed Green Roof project is practically related to, or very much related to what my colleague here was talking about, green buildings practically. We are nowadays aware of the problems in urban areas, problems which sometimes are people are not aware of, like air pollution, for example, or that we might not relate other problems with urban areas and why they happen. For example, urban flooding. Why are we experiencing more flooding than we used to years back, for example? So what we're doing is we're looking at green roofs. Green roofs is a new concept for Malta. It hasn't been introduced, or it's not very popular because of certain misconceptions or certain fears by people. Say, for example, leaks, water leaks. So what we're doing here is we're researching, we're creating a baseline study on green roofs so that the information we gain eventually will be disseminated to the public and to other stakeholders, policymakers, the government, you know, so as to encourage the increase in the technology. Because having one green roof, the effects are very limited. But if green roofs had to be disseminated over a larger period, then those benefits are more apparent.
And this is a project that is an EU project, or where
yes,
does it come from?
Okay, the project is funded, or rather partly funded, by the EU Life Plus body, which is a body which funds environment-related projects. The other half is funded by the university and by the Ministry of Transport and Infrastructure.
You have a green roof here on campus. Tell us about
that. Yeah. At the moment, we're testing two important aspects of green roof. One is the growing media, because on green roof, we don't use soil because of the problems of weight and compaction and the fine particles in the soil. So we're researching two types of green roof media, which have been purposely mixed or created to cater for our climate, our particular climate. Then we're also testing plants, because many people would say plants don't grow on our roofs because it's too hot and too dry. But luckily enough, we've proved them wrong. We've tested at least 15 species of native plants, which are growing successfully on the roof. Obviously, there is also the relation between the plants and the growing media, which has to be tested to make sure that they are compatible. In the near future, hopefully within a couple of months, we'll be constructing the demonstration green roof. So we'd have around 600 square meters of green roof at university over the what is now the Faculty for the Built Environment, where people can come and see what a green roof is and how it functions.
Yeah, I think people will be interested to actually see it in action.
Yes, we are already, in fact, we're already seeing interest. You know, people come and ask us when is the roof, when is it going to be ready, where can we come and see what you're doing. You know, there is interest in the concept. It's just a matter of getting people comfortable with having something on the roof apart from a few pots. Because what we want to do is, what a green roof is practically you get the growing media and you spread it over the part or the whole roof with particular layers which would protect, obviously, the building below.
So the advantages would be insulation advantages, I imagine, in my ignorance, for the building underneath.
There are I counted about 12 advantages. I won't go through them all, but there's insulation, as you said. Our summers are pretty hot, which means that the especially the top floor suffers from excessive heat, which means that you have to use a lot of air conditioning. Having a green roof will cut that heat substantially, which means that you're using less air conditioning, which means that the building is more carbon neutral. Obviously, there are other ways of increasing that efficiency. So there's that one. There's the protection to the membrane and the structure, because there is less contraction and expansion of the roof slab. There is flood mitigation, because obviously the growing media is absorbing the rainwater until it's saturated, then eventually the water will go down the drain, which means there's less water in the street. Obviously it's an amenity space, you've got something which is nicer to look at, it's something which can be used for education purposes. Then there's biodiversity, which is very important and which is unfortunately lacking in our urban areas because of the way we're destroying gardens and soil sealing and all that aspect. So there's quite a few advantages.
Are they labor intensive? I'm thinking of the working wives of today and wondering how many hours a week you'd have to spend looking after this green roof.
Yeah, well, it all depends. First of all, there are two types of green roofs. There's what we call the intensive and what is extensive. So the intensive is very much similar to a garden at ground level. So you'd have trees, shrubs, you know, so you need quite a bit of management. An extensive green roof would require very little management. In fact, I mean, I can proudly say that on our green roof we haven't watered the plants since last October, which is very good, considering that in summer we used to water them three times a week. So it all depends on what species you use. Certain plants need more maintenance, where others practically nothing. So,
what about the problem of use of the roof also for other environmental friendly actions like having photovoltaic panels and this sort of thing? How are you going to share the space with those?
With them, all right. One of the advantages of green roofs is that it lowers the ambient temperature. Okay, because the plants are making use of the solar energy, so the ambient temperature tends to be reduced, even because of evapotranspiration. On the other hand, solar panels are most efficient at 24, 25 degrees. The further up the temperature goes, the higher temperature is above the 24, 25 mark, the less efficient they become, solar panels. So green roofs complement solar panels in the fact that they lower the temperature, which makes solar panels efficient. So that's another
point.
Yeah,
yes,
it's another advantage of green roof.
And one of the things I wanted to talk about, though we don't have much time, unfortunately, is the question of cost. These green roofs, I presume they can actually be installed without an enormous outlay.
All right. The exact cost we have to confirm once we build our own green roof. We tried initially at the beginning of the project, we tried to find local waste material so as to reduce costs of importation, of importing material from, I don't know, from Italy, from other places. But unfortunately, we didn't find the material. So obviously, it has to be imported. But the exact cost, we will have to verify eventually once the our construction project is in place.
A last word from Kevin Gutt about this idea of the mentality being so important in the progress of these areas that you've been talking about. Are you optimistic about how things are going in Malta in this area?
Yes, I would say that there are a lot of efforts being undertaken at a central government level, which are sharpening the focus on water resources and waste management. I think from our point of view, the way we can help is by putting the research results in a context which can be understood by the audience which is following us, be it the technical people and the professional people at central government level, but more importantly, taking it to the general public and to take it to the business community in order to demonstrate that effortlessly we can make our efforts pay.
Thank you so much, both of you, Antoine Gutt and Kevin Gutt, for coming to talk to us about these green efforts that are being made in Malta within the university for the benefit of also society in general. Thank you so much. You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il-programm li għadkom kemm smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.